And now, it's time for the Broken Sea Audio Production OTR Swag Cast.
And tonight on the Swagcast, we have a couple of shows from the CBS Radio Workshop and Escape, focusing on time. One is semi-unknown story, and the other, a classic. Enjoy.
Neo Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. We accept time as we know it. The sun in the morning, the moon at night, so many days, so many hours, minutes, seconds, all going forward, while you and I and everyone we know goes backwards. At least we're getting older, which is kind of not keeping up with time. Supposing it were possible to repeat life. Not reincarnation, but repeating yourself in another era and beginning all over again. That is the premise of today's story on Mystery Theater.
Jake, this is 1880. You come from the year 1980. By means of the time box, you made a 100 years trip backwards. So you know already what I cannot know yet.
And you suspect your daughter Priscilla is in love with a criminal?
I want to know what's in store for her. You can find out what I'll never know until it's too late.
Well, this man she's in love with, what crime do you think he's going to be accused of?
I believe he's going to murder Priscilla.
Our mystery drama, The Time Box, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by G. Frederick Lewis and stars Russell Horton. I'll be back shortly with Act One. We're in the town of North Orange. It's not as well known as East Orange or South Orange, but it's got good schools, clean streets, fair taxes, garbage picked up on time, mail delivered regularly, and it even puts out its own newspaper. One of the favorite columns is the Orange Box, written 6 days a week by Jake Howard, who right now just happens to be winding up the weekend words.
So, let me remind you, dear readers, the present is built on the past. Dig down a few feet anywhere on this earth, and there lies the remains of a previous civilization, of a previous century. Before North Orange had cars, cabs, and buses, we had trolleys. And before that, horse cars. Today, up on Main and Third, they're digging out the foundation for a big shopping mall. I'm hoping in that big hole to find a clue to a 100-year-old mystery. Tell you about it in my next column. So be sure to open up your orange box Monday morning. Yours, Jake Howard.
Kidding me, aren't you, Mr. Howard?
What?
I said you...
I can't hear you.
Wait till I put her into neutral.
These big dipper shovels make so much racket, you never get used to it.
Mac, it just might happen I'll spot something which will clue me into a story I'm writing.
You mean I might dig up a treasure or something?
Might. You know what used to stand here on the corner of Main and Third about 100 years ago?
Fort Knox?
Yeah, something better, possibly. Right here was the laboratory of one of the greatest unsung inventors of the 1800s.
Oh, Edison? No, don't tell me. Alexander Graham Bell?
Nope. Dryden Harper.
Oh,
Dryden Harper. On this very spot, the trolley ran right past his door.
So, who was this Dryden Harper?
Well, in my book, and I've done a lot of research on this, he was just as great an inventor as any of them.
What'd he invent?
Well, something more important than the electric light, the phonograph, or the telephone. But all we have to go on are his notes. Nothing patented, no material clues.
So how come nobody ever heard of him?
Well, they will when I'm through. I'm going to write 6 whole columns, a whole week about Dryden Harper. And right here, where you're digging, Mac, is where the story begins.
Well, where'd you find out about this guy?
A reporter never reveals his sources. Okay, you can start up your shovel again.
See that truck pulling in? Got to fill her up fast to make up for lost time. All right, here comes the first load. Watch it.
Hey, hold it. Don't let that truck move off.
He's going nowhere. I've got to give him 5 more bucketfuls.
Put your steam shovel in neutral and come with me, Mac. Let's climb into that truck. There's something there I want to see.
What are you looking for, Mr. Howard?
I think it's right under here. I saw it fall off your shovel right about here. Now, if I could just push all this junk to one side. Yeah. There she is.
Is that what you had me stop working for? An old black wooden box?
Easy. Let me lift it up. Funny looking, isn't it? Hinges on this side, a lock on that.
Small box. I mean, it's not big. Is it heavy?
20 pounds, I'd say. I wouldn't like to get hit with it. Wonder if this belonged to him. Looks old enough.
Mr. Howard, do you mind? Take the box and let's get off the truck. 2 other trucks are lining up over there. I gotta get going.
Crazy, this old box. Well made. Hey, you see those 2 holes drilled into the top about 2 inches apart? You haven't got a screwdriver on you, Mac. I'd like to see what's inside this. Maybe I can pry it open with my fingernails.
Sir, indeed. Thank you so much.
Oh, I saw you getting off the trolley and then stumble, and then there was all this smoke. I couldn't just stand there and not help a lady. Are you all right?
Yes, I think so. It was stupid of me to have fallen like that, wasn't it? I take this trolley every single day in both directions. Oh, I hope I didn't break anything in this box. My father would be extremely upset.
Well, may I carry the box for you? Is it heavy?
Yes, it is, sort of. I think that's how I lost my balance, getting off the trolley.
It's funny, I could swear...
Oh, please don't.
I don't know if I'm dreaming or not, but I've seen a wooden box very much like it, but where, I can't remember.
I do appreciate you helping me to my feet, sir. However...
However what?
Oh, I doubt very much you've ever seen this box before.
Oh, just a feeling I have. I could be wrong.
Nor have I ever seen you before, sir.
Oh, sorry. My name's Jake Howard.
How do you do, Mr. Howard? My name is Priscilla Harper.
Harper? Look, I know it's a very long shot, but do you happen to be related to Dryden Harper?
Why, yes. Yes, I am. I'm his daughter.
Dryden Harper's daughter? The Dryden Harper, the distinguished inventor, scientist, discoverer who was born in 1831?
Mr. Howard, for a stranger, you know a great deal about my father.
But you're so young. This is the town of North Orange, isn't it?
Oh, yes. But I've never seen you in town before. And I can see by your dress, you're not a native.
Miss Harper, could we sit for a moment on this bench? I believe I'm dreaming.
Oh, dear me. That is one of the most ancient and oft-used bits of flattery in the entire lexicon.
It is?
And I shall be glad to sit on this bench for a moment. I need to catch my breath before I go in.
Now, you are Dryden Harper's daughter, and you are sitting here dressed in,
perfectly ordinary street clothes.
Yes, you're sitting here, and I'm sitting here.
Are you quite well, Mr. Howard?
Amazing. Excuse me. You were saying you travel on this trolley car, and,
Well, I'm coming home now, actually. My father had asked me to bring this box to a fellow scientist at the other end of town. So I went, but when I got there, he wasn't home. You know, I've wasted my entire morning.
But wouldn't it... I mean, why didn't you phone him in advance to make sure he was home?
Phone him?
What year is this?
1880, of course. What a silly question. Isn't it 1880 where you come from, Mr. Howard? What did you mean about phone 'em?
What I meant was if you had telephoned, but then I realized, hey, 1880, there wasn't, you don't have...
The telephone. My father is very well acquainted with Mr. Bell.
Uh-huh.
In fact, Dad visited him in Boston 4 years ago when Mr. Bell first demonstrated his telephone.
Could you, would you introduce me to your father? You know, I've read a great deal about him, and in fact, as much as I could find, and to think I actually might be in a position to meet the gentleman, well, words fail me.
Mr. Howard, you happen to be right across the street from my father's house and laboratory. The trolley runs right past our corner. Certainly you may meet him.
Before I go in with you, may I have just one look at that wooden box you're carrying?
Sure, here, you may look at it.
So that's what those two holes were. Of course, two dials.
Mr. Howard... You're not trying to make me believe you've ever seen this box before.
Miss Harper, had I not ever seen that box, I would not be standing here with you at this very moment.
Mr. Howard... What you tell me about your trip through time pleases me enormously, but does not surprise me.
Mr. Harper, if you knew how excited I am to be actually in your house listening to you face to face, I don't know how to say it any better.
Well, thank you. It was my time box you found up there in 1980. Pretty bashed about, I gather, but still active.
Well, now, what about Bell and Edison? They haven't written anything about you.
We have to know Tom Edison and Alex Bell. You might say there's a professional rivalry between us, so I'm not surprised they didn't mention my name. Of course, neither of them have any idea about my time box.
Oh, well, if I get to meet them, you may be sure I won't say a word either.
You find my time box 100 years into the future, and it manages to convey you to our century. As I said, mum's the word about that.
May I ask, Mr. Howard, now that you're here, what do you intend to do?
Well, Miss Harper, I haven't given it a moment's thought. Fortunately, I'm a single man, no wife, no family. An orphan, in fact, so my disappearing from my own century at the corner of 3rd and Main isn't going to worry too many people.
It occurs to me, Priscilla, perhaps this young man from 100 years yet to come might help us.
How?
Along the lines we were discussing last night.
Dad, I wish you'd just stop using the time box for that stupid experiment. It isn't going to do you any good. I'm not ever going to stop seeing Hans. I don't care if you materialize Socrates or Shakespeare to come here and argue with me. Nobody and nothing in the world is going to put a stop to my friendship with Hans.
Priscilla, You know what has been happening here in North Orange the past 4 months? I couldn't bear to think my own daughter could come to the same fate.
Nothing's going to happen to me. Your suspicions are ridiculous.
My own daughter may be next. Mr. Howard, I'd like you to stay for dinner. It's something I would very much like to discuss with you.
Oh, Dad, why can't you be reasonable about this? There is nothing, absolutely nothing, to connect the man I love with the deaths of all those girls.
Quite a situation we have here. A scientist who wishes to prevent a tragedy of love and marriage by consulting an eyewitness of the future. I've often thought how many missteps would I myself have avoided had I but known what would be ahead of time. On second thought, perhaps I'd rather take my chances and not know the unknown. I shall return shortly with Act Two. Jake Howard's daily column called The Orange Box will suddenly stop appearing in 1980 because, unwittingly, he has found himself in the same town, his hometown, on the same street corner 100 years earlier. Where a hole was being excavated now stands a house, and in it lives a little-known scientific genius, one Dryden Harper and his daughter Patricia. Supposing someone from the year 2080 suddenly appeared on your doorstep. There's a great deal you'd like to know also, isn't there?
Mr. Howard, I must talk to you. Would you stay to dinner?
Oh, I couldn't. I just couldn't. All I wanted to do was to meet you and chew the fat, you know, find out what makes you tick, you know?
Chew the fat?
There isn't much on record about you except your notes, which I found in the Library of Congress.
To a scientist, what a boon to meet a man from the future. Priscilla, can we forget our differences for now? There's still time to do the necessary marketing for dinner. My daughter, sir, is an excellent cook, a quality she inherited from her mother, God rest her soul.
But we don't know the first thing about Mr. Howard, Dad.
Miss Harper, my interest in your father is quite genuine.
Priscilla, how can you doubt Mr. Howard's veracity? Do you think my time box didn't work? Have you ever seen clothing like he's wearing? What are those blue cloth trousers, anyway?
Oh, blue jeans.
Blue jeans. I never. Priscilla, who have you heard talking about a steam shovel, chewing fat? What else? Oh, yes. What makes me tick? I tell you this, daughter. If Jake here is a charlatan and pretending to have come from 100 years away, so be it. At least I'll enjoy his performance. Have a bit more sherry, my boy.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Harper.
So, you're a reporter on a newspaper right here in North Orange.
Mm-hmm. But the paper wasn't found until 1900.
Oh, 20 years from now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a columnist.
You do a lot of research, eh?
Well, that's how I ran across all your accomplishments.
Well, don't tell me about them before I do them. I may be disappointed. How good are your town records, the history of North Orange, that kind of thing?
Pretty complete. We've got records of people who lived here since, 1790. That's what my newspaper column is all about, the history of the town.
What's that time? 5, 6? I lost count.
5.
Oh, good. We've at least a half hour before Priscilla gets back. Jake, let me pull my chair closer to you. Because what I'm about to tell you is confidential.
Well, go ahead, Dryden.
In all your researches about our town up there in 1980, did you ever run across the name Dr. Hans Flexner?
Dr. Hans Flexner. Oh, is that the Hans your daughter is interested in?
Yes. She thinks she's in love with him.
Well, why would there be any record of him in 1980? Is he about to make some extraordinary medical discovery? Would he be in the almanac?
I don't know. What I do know is, this is hard for me to say. What I want to know is, was a Dr. Flexner ever arrested for any crime?
You mean you suspect Priscilla is in love with a criminal?
Was he ever arrested? Will he be arrested? I want to know the future now, Jake. You've come from there. Only you can help me. In the past 4 months, 10 young ladies have been stabbed to death. By the time the police arrive, there isn't a clue left. The poor girls have been sliced up as though by some insane doctor, a surgeon, or even a dentist.
And there's evidence a surgical instrument was used?
Expertly, in each case. What's more, it appears that each victim was unconscious before she was murdered. You follow that? They're not sure, but they think a newly discovered anesthetic was used. Ether.
Yes, to knock them out first.
What? Oh, well, but it could also have been chloroform. That's why I say the murderer could also be a dentist.
And what's that got to do with Dr. Hans Flexner?
Hans Flexner is a dentist.
Dad! Dad, I'm back! Sorry it took so long. Dinner will be ready in about an hour.
Sir, I don't think you can pin this rap on Flexner without more to go on. Now, did they find any of the murder weapons?
Yes. One. A surgeon's scalpel.
Nothing identifying on the scalpel, I suppose.
How could there be?
Hopeless. Well, if you don't catch the murderer in the act, I don't think you people have much of a chance. It's unsolvable.
That's how you happened to be here tonight, Jake.
How come?
I was using my time box to help me be a detective. Something went wrong with the timing, and here you are. Do you have a place to live in while you're visiting this century?
Well, no, I haven't.
Then you'll sleep here. After all, I'm responsible for the whole thing.
Dad is so funny, but I expect you're finding that out.
Miss Harper...
Priscilla.
Oh.
If Dad calls you Jake all through dinner and insists you call him Dryden, I'm not going to be left out.
Okay, sure. Do you still think I'm some actor playing the part of a time voyager?
No, I suppose not. Mainly because I know the power of the time box. Has he said much to you about Hans?
Dr. Flexner?
I can see he has. Dad's got this fixed idea that Hans has been killing young girls and one day he'll do away with me. If you met Hans, you'll see right away what a silly idea it is. So to satisfy himself, Dad set his time box for 1830, 50 years ago, so he could materialize that great hypnotist, Franz Mesmer.
Is that true? The time box can pick people out if you want it to?
Well, certainly. I can't begin to tell you how many celebrities have shown up here on our doorstep from centuries back. But you're the first person to arrive from the future.
So the date settings on the box are not always accurate.
No, that hasn't been perfected. That was the scientist I was going to see this morning when you turned up at the trolley. He's blind, but Dad thought he could help perfect the directional dial.
Uh-huh. And why did he want to materialize Mesmer?
He was going to deceive Hans, pass off Mesmer as an old friend from Germany who needed a tooth extracted. And while he was in the chair, he was supposed to mesmerize Hans.
To get him to admit under hypnosis he was the mass murderer.
Exactly. Oh, stupid, isn't it?
You know what? You're getting to sound just like you lived in my day.
Oh, Hans, I'm so glad to be with you at last.
I hear you have a visitor at your house, Liebchen.
A friend of Dad's.
Hmm.
Who is he? Another inventor?
Oh, no, no, no. He's a newspaper man.
I see. How is your tooth?
Oh, it still hurts where you looked at it the day before yesterday.
All right. We shall have another look.
Isn't it maddening? I used to tell Dad my teeth hurt and I would have to have them taken care of, which was all a pretense so I could come and see you. And now it's really hurting. It's as if I was being punished for lying.
Get into the chair, Liebchen. We'll see what is the matter. There. Weiter. Yeah. I think that wisdom tooth should come out. Do you mind?
Will the pain stop?
Oh, immediately.
Oh, darling Hans, I trust you implicitly.
Since the removal could be painful, suppose I give you something to make you fall asleep. It will take me half an hour or so to prepare what I must do.
You may not believe this, Dryden. I've never ridden in a horse-drawn trolley in my life. Or any kind of trolley.
That is so? Is there no public transportation in the 1980s?
Oh, yes, but it's buses or taxis, you know.
I've stopped trying to understand your vocabulary.
Oh, no, wait, I take that back. I have been on a trolley. When I was in San Francisco, I took the cable car. That's an electric trolley that's pulled uphill by a cable that moves underground.
That's extraordinary. Did you say electric?
Oh, yeah, electric power is used everywhere. Now we've even got nuclear power.
Please.
Oh, you'll be having electricity pretty soon. Commercially.
That's what Benjamin Franklin drew from lightning down a silk kite string into a Leyden jar, yes?
Yes, but this kind will be man-made. Now, George Westinghouse is making some dynamos in about 5 years. Yeah, 1885.
I'll watch for them.
Is it far to the police station?
No, we're almost there. And the Bureau of Licenses is next door to it. I must say, Jake, you go about investigating Hans Flexner in a most professional way.
Years in the newspaper business. The information I want seldom comes to me. I have to go to it.
Well, we're here. Where do we go first?
To the police. Now, Dryden, don't be nervous. Mm. Don't borrow trouble. Just hang in there.
Would you translate for me, please?
Keep cool.
Well, if that means I shouldn't get hot and worry unduly, I'll try not to.
Hans, darling, why does it take so long for you to prepare that sleeping powder or whatever it is?
Well, it's all done. I should give you something very new, Liebchen. Much better than the nitrous oxide, those old fashioned dentists use. Now, close your eyes.
What are you going to give me to put me to sleep?
It is called chloroform. Very effective. Now, I'll just hold this cloth over your nose, lie back, and breathe. What the devil is that?
There's someone at the door. I thought you told me you didn't have any patients today.
Open up! You hear me, Flexner? I know you're in there.
Oh, my heavens, it's Jake.
Go away, whoever you are. I'm busy.
Priscilla, are you all right?
Jake, what are you doing here?
How dare you break into my office? Nobody comes in here without an appointment. Look what you did to the door.
Come on, Priscilla.
I shall go and inform the police at once.
Yes, why don't you do that, Flexner? Tell them also where you got your degree in dental surgery. There doesn't seem to be any record of it.
Jake, what are you saying?
Tell them also you use chloroform on your patients. I can smell it clear out into the hall.
Jake, have you gone crazy?
Chloroform. The whole dental profession uses ether, not nearly as dangerous. Priscilla? Get up out of that chair. You are coming with me.
Yes, it wasn't until Queen Victoria was given chloroform upon the birth of Prince Leopold that it became the accepted anesthetic. She tells us in her journal, "Dr. Snow gave me that blessed chloroform, and the effect was soothing, quieting, and delightful beyond measure. Somehow, I had the idea that Dr. Hans Flexner was not intending merely to soothe and quiet his patient. Perhaps I'm mistaken. I shall return shortly with Act 3. This is not an easy story to preface, comment on, or conclude. Once you meddle with time, it's difficult to apply the rules we live by today. Jake's yesterday is not Priscilla's. Priscilla's tomorrow may not be Jake's. One factor, however, could overcome the 100 years that separated these two. Love. Yes, love. Unfortunately, right now, that is the furthest emotion from Priscilla's mind.
How dare you break into the private office of a dear friend of mine and threaten him with such a display of ungentlemanliness? I don't know how I can ever face Hans again. Dad, you have no idea how embarrassing this 1980 man was.
Now, hold on, Priscilla. First of all, your dear friend isn't even a licensed dentist.
At the Hall of Records, Priscilla, the name Hans Flexner doesn't appear on the Dental Association's list.
I won't have you two spying on me and my friends. I won't have it.
And I won't have a daughter of mine screaming like a fishwife. Go to your room.
So he doesn't have a license to practice dentistry here in North Orange. How do you know he didn't get his license abroad?
We don't know.
Dad, if you'd like to know the truth, my tooth has been getting very painful. I saw Hans several times, but it keeps getting worse. He was just about to pull it when Jake charged in like a bull.
What? Is that really true? Not like all those other times?
On my honor. It's killing me.
Well, then, of course, we'll have it looked at. First thing in the morning. But I'll choose the dentist, and I'll go with you.
All right, I agree. You choose the dentist. It's too painful for me to refuse.
Nurse? Excuse me, am I in the right place?
That depends. Do you wish to see the doctor for an extraction or a fill-in?
My name is Jake Howard. I'm visiting with Dryden Harper and his daughter. I took an early morning stroll, and when I returned, they left me a note. They'd gone to this office. Miss Harper had an appointment. Are they still here?
Oh, you're Mr. Howard. They left word to tell you everything's all right. They've been and gone half an hour ago.
The doctor was able to locate the pain? The tooth, I mean?
Well, there was nothing wrong with the tooth. What even caused the discomfort was a small piece of cohesive gold foil we use in fillings. It was lodged under the gum.
Wait, I don't understand. Miss Harper isn't in the habit of eating gold foil.
You know, the doctor thought it was mysterious, too, since Miss Harper doesn't have a single filling. It was placed under the gum quite firmly. Ah, the poor child. It must have been very, very painful.
Hand me those tongs next to you, will you, Jake?
Thanks for inviting me to your lab, Dryden. It's a handy little furnace you have there.
Well, it's my little hell and my little heaven.
What are you going to put in the furnace?
The secret of what powers the time box.
You're going to tell me?
Well, I feel I owe it to you, Jake. And if you're writing about how I experiment, this is crucial.
Oh, you don't owe me anything.
On the way home from the dentist, Priscilla wouldn't say a word. But when you told her to ask herself why would her great love, Hans, wish to hurt her, I think she began to see him differently. So, I have you to thank.
Well, I wish... Never mind.
Tell me.
She's a lovely girl. I wish I didn't have to go back to my century, that's all. You see... Now, what are you going to do with the tongs?
Under this bell jar, what do you see?
Looks like particles of stone.
Small pieces of a meteorite. I lift the bell jar, take up one small particle with the tongs, open the furnace door, and place the piece of meteorite in the crucible inside the furnace. Close the door, turn my hourglass upside down, and wait.
I'll be darned.
Ah, that hasn't dawned on the scientists of the 1980s, eh?
No. To my knowledge, no one's thought of releasing the energy stored in meteorites. Oh, by the way, where's Priscilla?
She'll be here when she's washed the dinner dishes. Whenever I have a special problem, she helps me here at night.
Still problems?
Only one. The directional dial. The time dial works very well, barring an accident, as in your case. But to materialize someone across space, that directional finder must be made accurate.
Good evening, gentlemen. Shall we tackle the problem?
Priscilla, we were all just having dinner together. Why so formal?
Say, I have an idea. Is there a place in town where I can get some ice cream at night?
Iced cream? Oh, I'd love it.
Is it popular in the 1980s?
Is it? So, where do I go?
Well, you're at 3rd and Main now. Just one block down to 4th, you're at Mama Kelly's. She's open till 10, and she's got ice cream.
Mm-hmm. You both go for vanilla?
We sure do.
Well, I'll be back as soon as I can.
I'm glad you're being a little nicer to Jake, Priscilla.
It's not hard. I suppose one of these days he'll be wanting to get back to his century.
I'm charging up the time box to full strength for his trip.
Oh, so you think he'll go back, too?
Well, he could stay in 1880, grow old here. Be smart enough to get work. Mm. Imagine if he stayed and used his knowledge of the next 100 years, he'd be invaluable. He could be president of this country for a lifetime.
Dad, there's somebody outside the laboratory.
What? Where?
I just saw a face at the window, and then it went away.
Oh, some nosy Parker. I'll go out and see who it is.
No, don't, please.
Well, what's there to be afraid of? All right. Hand me that poker from the furnace. Keep an eye on the temperature gauge. Lower the gas if it gets too high. I'll go out and scare away whoever it is.
Well, here we are. Mama Kelly's best. One vanilla for you, one for me, and one for your... Trident. Where is he?
He just went out. We thought there was a prowler.
A prowler in this day and age? Next thing you'll tell me there are muggers. Yeah, let's go out and find him. I'll leave his ice cream here. Oh. We ought to be able to see Dryden easily enough. It's a fine moon.
Jake, why don't we just stand here and enjoy it?
Hmm.
Dad'll walk all the way around the block and come right back. Jake, I apologize.
Oh, don't. Girls in love. You can't reason with him.
No, I don't think I was. That's the funny part about it. When everything came out about Hans, I think I was sort of relieved. Maybe I was in love with love.
Hey, look. Hey, you, come back here. There's somebody running over there. I'm going to follow him here. Now, take my ice cream. Now, go back into the lab and lock the door. Go on. I think I lost him. I thought they'd invented street lights by now. Which way did he go? Darn. Why'd I fall over? There's someone on the ground. Dryden! Holy mackerel. He's been chloroformed. Hello, Priscilla.
You scared me, Hans.
Since when do I frighten you, Liebchen?
How did you get into the laboratory? What were you doing with that knife?
You haven't been to see me in a long time. Don't you like me anymore?
Hans, I was with you yesterday.
I think something must be done about that tooth. See, I brought this cloth with me. Now put it over your face, and you take a deep breath, and all will be over.
Oh, I can smell it from over here.
You don't like me anymore, do you?
Not when you behave this way.
They all turn on me in the end. They want your friendship, your pretty words. They like the presents you give them, and then suddenly it's all over.
Who are they, Hans?
All of them. All of them. You're just like all of them.
So, when you believe they are turning against you, Hans, what do you do?
I don't let them do that. They never reject me. I don't let them reject me.
So, it is true. It's all true. Jake was right.
Who was right?
I was right, Flexner. Get away from her. Priscilla, duck!
No, Jake, don't! Don't throw it!
Priscilla?
Jake, are you still here?
Yeah, I am. Wait till the smoke clears. You'll see for yourself.
Oh, I see you now. Oh, Jake. When I saw you lift up the time box, I was afraid I'd never see you again.
It was the only thing handy to throw at him.
Hans? Where is he?
I saw the box hit him on the shoulder just before there was that big bang. He's nowhere, Priscilla. Or the time box.
That's gone, too?
Not a trace. Now we have no idea which century is getting a present of one Hans Flexner.
Or which country. Well,
who knows? He might be spinning in space forever.
What do I care about him? You're here, and you're safe. Oh, my gosh. I completely forgot. Did you find Dad?
Oh, yeah, I sure did. He'd been chloroformed. I brought him to and carried him up to his bedroom. He seems okay.
He must have heard the explosion. He'll be wondering what it's all about.
The door to the lab was open, Dryden, and there was Flexner with a scalpel in his hand.
Dad, he was pointing it right at my throat. But Jake, he stopped him.
Oh, well, he threw the time box at him. Aimed dead at his head, hit him in the shoulder. Not a very good shot.
But it worked. There was a flash. Didn't you hear the sound, Dad? A big flash, and Hans disappeared.
And the time box?
Oh, it went with him. No question, he wanted to destroy Priscilla. Oh, now, how do you feel, Dryden?
Well, except for this terrible taste in my mouth. All right.
I'm sorry about the time box. There went my ticket to tomorrow. I guess I'll just have to hang around here.
That's right, Jake. You've no way of getting back to 1980 now.
Did you shut down the furnace, Priscilla?
Oh, no. I'll go take care of it.
I'm going to need those meteorite chips for the next time box I build.
You're going to build another one right away, Dad?
I was thinking, Dryden, I'm in no rush to get back to my job. The column can wait.
Well, don't you concern yourself, Jake. I can build an even better and more accurate time box. It would take time, but I could.
Oh, Dad.
I tell you, Dryden, there's no hurry. I've no reason to go at all. 1880 sort of, suits me.
It would appear that anything can happen when you mess about with time. Here today, gone tomorrow. A pleasure, certainly, if you're able to go back, as did Jake Howard. But supposing one went too far forward in time, it might be pretty bleak and lonely up there in exploded space. I'll be back shortly. Our old friend Benjamin Franklin, who used his years probably better than any other American before or since, used to say, "If time be of all things the most precious, wasting time must be the greatest extravagance, since lost time is never found again. Let us then be up and doing to the purpose. Which isn't bad advice, is it? Even though I had to go back in time 200 years to get it. Our cast included Russell Horton, Diana Kirkwood, and Robert Dryden. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Rushing forward through time, far into the future, trying desperately to flee the clutching fingers of a band of night creatures, a dreamlike horror from which there seems no escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure. Tonight we escape to the year 100,080, and to a world where beauty and terror live side by side, as H.G. Wells described it in his immortal story, The Time Machine.
You must be mad, Dudley. A time machine.
Yes, my friend. A time machine.
This thing?
This very thing.
Well, this contraption, this whatever it is, made of quartz and brass and ivory, with its levers and dials and its seat in the middle. This is the result of 3 years' hard work?
I promise you, Fowler, that on this machine, a man can go wherever he likes in time. By working these levers, a man can choose his century, his year, his very day.
Oh, that's impossible. It's out of the question.
In one of the journeys I've already taken on this little contraption.
Well, I'm afraid you're having a bad dream.
You mean I've developed into a liar? Very well, you shall have proof, my friend.
Oh.
Just climb on, Fowler. Sit in the seat with me. I'll take you for a little spin.
You mean right now?
Right now.
Well, just in case it should work, aren't there any preparations we should make?
No, Fallon. You won't need any luggage on this trip, not even a toothbrush. You'll be back in less than a minute.
All right.
I'm on.
Now what?
Hold tight, because it sways a good deal. I'd hate to lose you.
Well, I can't be frightened, Dudley.
Then you're braver than I am. Tell me, what time is it?
It's just 12 noon.
Before we start, I want to adjust this control a bit.
Is everything ship-shaped?
Oh, yes. Tell me, did you notice anything just then?
Only a noise, a humming noise, nothing else.
And what time is it?
You just asked me, old man. That's funny.
What?
My watch says 11 o'clock. I could have sworn it was noon a moment ago. Must be something wrong with it.
There's nothing wrong with the watch. It's only that I touched the lever to test it. And we've gone forward a full day. 23 hours at any rate.
Dudley.
Have you finished scoffing, Fowler?
Yes, I believe I have.
Then hold tight. This will be the real article.
I'm ready, Dudley.
Good man. Well, say goodbye, Fowler. Say goodbye to 1948.
We went off with a shattering jar. With machines swaying under us, the walls of Dr. Dudley's laboratory suddenly fell away, and night was speeding after day like the flapping of a black wing.
I saw the sun hopping across the sky, leaping swiftly across it every second and every second marking a day. I saw the moon spinning through her quarters like a ball, from new to full, all in the twinkling of an eye. Trees grew and blossomed like puffs of smoke and then passed away, and all the while we were going faster. And now our pace was a year a second, so that second by second the white snow flashed across the world and was followed by the bright, brief spring. And still we went on into the future.
How do you feel, Fowler?
Sort of weak and very dizzy.
Don't let go. Don't fall off.
Where are we? How far have we come?
We're in 100,000 and 50 and 60 and 70.
That's enough. Stop it, Dudley. I can't stand anymore. Stop it.
Fowler. Are you all right?
I believe so. No broken bones. What happened?
I'm not sure. I must have stopped too suddenly.
Where are we, Dudley?
Look around for yourself. On a wide lawn, in a beautiful, vast garden.
I meant geographically.
Just where we were when we started. We're standing exactly on the spot where my laboratory stood 100,000 years ago.
And the year?
100,080.
Seemed absolutely incredible. A dream, but a pleasant one. For the garden in which we found ourselves was beautiful and summery and inviting. At some distance we could see a large, imposing building. All was quiet and peaceful, almost too much so. And a sense of strangeness, of incredible strangeness, sent a shiver up my spine.
100,080.
Dudley, have you thought what we might find here? What manner of man? What danger?
I don't see any men at all.
Well, perhaps they don't exist at all anymore. If they do, what are they like? How have they developed?
It's been a long interval between us, more than 100,000 years. We won't know until we see them.
And then it may be too late. Suppose the race has lost its manliness and has become a savage animal.
Do you want to go back?
Yes, Dudley, I'm frightened. Let's go back.
Dudley!
From over there in the bushes.
Sounded human.
Come on.
But Dudley, we don't have any weapons.
Come on!
Oh, it's a child. Look, it seems to be a very small girl.
There's been a beast here of some kind. It struggled with her. Look at the marks on her arms.
See here, my dear. You'll be all right now. You won't be harmed. Of course, she wouldn't understand English.
I don't think it's that. She's motioning us to go with her. I don't believe they have any language at all, Dudley.
What about the animal? Did you see her?
No, not a glimpse. It was too fast for us.
Perhaps we'd better go back, Dudley. The girl seems to be all right now.
Leave her like this. Without seeing her people and the way they live? You want to go back so soon?
Yeah, I've had enough.
Well, they haven't, old man. Because they're here. All around us.
They had crept up on soundless feet to surround us, the little people of this era. And the girl we'd saved was not a child, but a full-grown woman. For they all stood 4 feet high, dressed in simple tunics, beautiful creatures, but terribly frail, with a plump, soft kind of frailty. Their mouths were small, and their little chins ran to a point, and they made no sound. They were like eerie figures in a dream, and all we could hear was the heavy rustling of their clothes as they surged happily around us, their faces wreathed in smiles. Why, they're not savage at all. They're very loving and gentle little people.
Yes, but there's something terribly wrong with them.
How do you mean?
Well, they seem to have the minds of 5-year-olds. This one over here has been trying to talk to me with gestures. Look at him. He seems to be asking me if I've come from the sun or a thunderstorm.
How'd you expect them to be?
Far ahead of us, of course. Incredibly ahead of us in knowledge and in science. And look at them. Children.
Oh, they seem happy in this huge garden of theirs. That's something. I've changed my mind, Dudley. Maybe we shall enjoy spending a few days with our little friends.
The little people led us home into their valley. They lived in colossal buildings, sleeping all together in one huge hall, eating in another, playing and frolicking together in the sunshine, and Dudley and I lived with them for days in utter contentment. One afternoon, we walked together along the banks of the great river.
There's no apparent difference among the sexes. They all wear the same clothes, have the same soft, hairless skin, same feminine roundness of limb.
Yeah. I wonder if it's because they're vegetarians.
They're vegetarians because they have to be. You haven't run across any horses or dogs or cattle of any kind, have you?
No, now that you mention it.
With good reason. They're all extinct by now. Just as the dinosaur is with us.
Dudley, there's something very strange here. Something hidden away and silent.
You may be right. Anyway, I've taken the precaution of removing the controls from the machine. I don't much fancy the idea of someone riding away with it into another century and leaving us here for the rest of our lives.
Dudley, do you recognize this bit of ground?
Why, yes, this is where we landed.
I thought so. I wasn't sure.
Why do you ask?
Can't you see? Look around. It's empty. What's happened to the machine?
They've taken it away. They've stolen it.
Where, Dudley? Where?
Look. See the tracks where they've dragged it? Over here. Come along. Right here. By this monument, the end of the trail.
Those are brass doors in the base and they're locked.
The machine, it must be in there inside. We must get it. Break down the door.
How can we?
Here, we use the levers.
Oh, it's no good, Dudley. They're solid. We'll never break through.
Never? Never? Do you mean stay here for all our lives? Do you mean never go home again? They must open the machine, the time machine.
The time machine was gone. The brass doors of the monument held. Our retreat was cut off, a thin line by which we could make our way back home, back to our own time and our own people. But there seemed nothing we could do. We had no way of communicating with the little people, of asking what they had done with the machine and why and how to get it back. They merely stood around and watched our vain efforts. There was nothing hostile in their attitude. They were more like simple, wondering children. Only one, the young woman, Weiner, whose life we had saved on our first day, had become really friendly. She went with us wherever we walked and brought us presents of garlands of flowers, slept near us at night in the hall, and we in turn had taught her a few words of English. Now, we redoubled our efforts, like men racing against a clock, so that we might speak to her and discover the secret of our immense loss.
No, not these, Dudley. No.
How could you be so sure that your people didn't steal the machine? Aren't there any thieves among them? Are they all perfect?
That's a lot, Dudley. Awaken them. Besides, she doesn't understand.
But the thief must be sleeping somewhere in this hall. Weena, they take machine.
No, Dudley. No.
Who then? Who?
We are friends.
Yes. Yes. Friends.
We need, must have machine.
Yes, Dudley. Yes.
Who took machine? Are there other people? Not yours.
Others?
What about those doors, Weena? Doors. Open.
No. Oh, no.
Weena, machine in there must open.
No. No, not open.
All right, my dear. Go to sleep. Get some rest.
Yes, Dudley. Sleep.
You too, Fowler. Try, anyway.
Yeah, I tried. It's no good.
What's to become of us, Val? Are we caught here in this century? Should we spend our lives with the little people and their secret?
Try to sleep, Dudley. We'll go back to the monument tomorrow. We'll find a way of breaking in. Dudley.
Yes?
Did you just... There it is again.
What?
Something on my face, cold and filthy to the touch. On my face and in my hair, cold as death.
Dudley! You're right, my boy. There's something in here with us.
I smell of the grave. What was it?
I don't know. But look at them. The little people are all awake. It's as though they've been stampeded.
Let's get out of here. I want some fresh air. We went quickly through the hall and outside, away from the frantic rustling of the little people and into silence. The moon was full just overhead, and it was close to dawning. There was a faint sound speeding close behind us, and we turned, our nerves ragged and our muscles tensed. But it was only Weena coming swiftly to join us.
Weena, come closer, my girl.
Dudley.
Tell us, what do your people fear? What makes them afraid?
Afraid? Darkness.
Then there is something.
What do you mean, darkness?
Dark things. Dark places. Night.
Why? Why?
I don't know.
Why should they be afraid of the night, Dudley?
Perhaps it's not the night alone. Dark places. That's our cue. Perhaps it's something underground.
By now it was light, another day. We had wandered into a lovely wooded place, about a mile from the community. Suddenly, Weena screamed.
Dudley!
We stopped short. A pair of glaring eyes was fixed upon us. As we stood there petrified, the thing, a little ape-like figure, rushed across our path and disappeared in the clearing about 30 yards away. What was it?
I couldn't see it too well. It seemed to be dull white, with white hair in its head and down its back.
Looked like a small ape.
That's because it was running on all fours and with its arms held very low.
Weena, Weena, what's the matter?
Morlocks. They are Morlocks.
Who are the Morlocks? What are they? Weena, tell me.
No. No, go away.
Let's go over there and see where it disappeared.
In the clearing, we found a round, well-like opening. I leaned over and looked down a deep shaft, and as I did so, I saw a small, white creature retreating down a ladder in the well. Something like a human spider. Its large, bright eyes watching me as it went swiftly down, and then it disappeared in the shaft.
Paula, did you see it? Like an ape?
Yeah, yeah, but like a man.
So there are two species of men in this world. Hey, Fowler.
Yes?
The little people above the ground, and this obscene thing, this bleached monster below. Two races of men in this country.
That white look. It's common to animals that live in the dark, like huge rats, like worms that are cold to the touch. I know because they've touched me.
You can feel air being sucked down into the shaft.
Yes.
The earth must be tunneled enormously here under our feet. And these monsters live in the tunnels.
I think we know now who stole our time machine.
Yes, I'm sure of it.
Then?
Then we'll go down and have a look.
No, no, don't go.
Why not, Weena?
Warlocks, you never come back.
We've got to have our machine, my dear. You wait for us here.
No, no.
But we went down, our heels ringing on the small metallic bars that were meant for creatures so much smaller than we. Down we climbed, down, down, ever in darkness. Down, it seemed, into the center of the earth. The core of the world.
How much longer?
We won't know till we reach bottom. We
can only stop and rest.
It can't be much further.
I'm so terribly tired.
Hang on, old man. You hear that? Like machinery. We're almost there.
Well, thank heaven for that.
All right, Paula. I'm at the bottom. Come along, just a few more steps. Give me your hand, Fowler. Good. We're here.
Yeah. In the land of the Morlocks.
You have a match?
Yeah. Yeah.
There seems to be a large vaulted cavern at the end of the passage.
What do you suppose they'll do if they catch us?
I have no idea, so we'd better take care not to get caught. Another match.
That throbbing noise.
It's probably the ventilating system pumping air down. There must be thousands upon thousands of these Morlocks living under the earth.
And we haven't seen any yet, except for our friend who came down ahead of us. Why do you suppose they wanted our time machine?
I think they wanted us, Dudley. Not the machine.
And we've come to them.
We must. It's our only chance. Paula, if that noise does come from air pumps,
well,
why is it so stuffy here? So oppressive.
Dudley, that smell.
Blood. Light another match.
Dudley, look.
Straight ahead on the white metal table.
It's set for a meal.
Yes, with a big chunk of bloody meat.
And we know that cattle are extinct.
What do they feed on, these Morlocks?
Don't you know?
Yes, I do.
Another match.
All right, I... Dudley? Dudley? I haven't got any more. We've used our last match.
All right, we'll have to go back there then. We know the secret now anyway. The Morlocks living here underground are the masters of this age. And our friends up above, fatted cattle, fed by the Morlocks, clothed and supplied and housed until the day when they're cut out from the herd and brought underground as food. This is the future you're looking at. This is what we men of the 20th century shall come to.
Dudley, what is it?
I felt hands, cold hands.
Take one of these levers. Use it as a weapon. Lash out. Against the wall. Fowler, here beside me.
Dudley, what do we do?
Do! Fight them! Tell, use your lever man like this!
Dudley, they're all around us.
This way, Fowler, this way, back this way!
We went back in that evil darkness, fighting every step as we went, back to those projecting bars, kicking and clawing ourselves loose from their pallid, grasping hands and climbing up again toward daylight and freedom, away from their stench and the eagerness of their icy hands. And they didn't follow, for daylight was their enemy and their great fear. And we lived among the lush gardens of the gentle little people like prisoners, like men without reprieve, like men who are dead, for they still walk the earth. For the time machine was locked away behind great brass doors, and we knew we could never force them open. Then, one day, Weena told us of an old building, an ancient, staggering structure that had survived through many ages and was filled with many curious objects.
A museum. That's what it must be, a museum, Val. Perhaps from some earlier time.
Oh, I'm in no mood to go looking at a museum.
But don't you see? Specimens are hermetically sealed in museums. Perhaps there are things, weapons, machinery, something we could use.
Oh, sure, if we could find some dynamite or gunpowder or something.
We could blast those doors. We could get in.
Where is this place, Weena? This old building that no one ever goes near.
I take you, Paula. It's not far.
A chance, old man. A slim chance, but a chance nonetheless.
All day we've wandered through the great ruined halls. The building had been deserted and in disuse for perhaps a century. The childlike men of that time had long since ceased to care about anything but their own personal comforts. It was late afternoon and growing dark when we came upon the chemical section. We'd found nothing useful to us until then. And now came the worst disappointment of all.
And it's dust, all of it. It's been dust for centuries.
Another dead end. It's hopeless.
We were out of our heads to hope that nitrates would retain their form for 100,000 years.
We better go if nothing here.
Wait just a moment. There's something in this case.
You can break it with your lever.
Stand back a little. Hallelujah. A box of matches hermetically sealed.
Yes, perfect. Not even damn.
And what shall we do with them? Burn down those brass doors?
Better keep them anyway. At least we can smoke again. And you can't tell.
Paula.
Yeah?
On the floor. See them? Small, narrow footprints leading away into the darkness at the end of the gallery.
Dudley.
We'd better go.
Pick Queen up and carry her. We'll have to run for it.
Don't be frightened, my dear. It'll be all right.
Go on, run!
We came out of the gloom of that place into the deeper gloom of dust. Suddenly, we saw we were trapped. All around us were the Morlocks. There were the thousands surrounding us and coming closer, a long, even line of deathly white, their eyes blinking in the half-light, and the tiny mouths alive with appetite.
The matches, Dudley. Light a fire. Here, the forest is dry.
Good. We'll have an inferno here in a minute, and our little friends don't like light or heat.
The fire leaped high to the heavens, and the countryside was ablaze. The Morlocks turned in fear, blinded by the glare. Some of them burned into the middle of the raging flames, and the rest faded away like a fog. Dudley had left a narrow passageway for our retreat, and we fled down a long corridor of leaping flames and blistering heat. We fled to safety. We fled back toward the community of the little people. And as we ran, we passed the huge monument with its great bronze doors that were locked tight on our time machine. And suddenly, in the glare of the distant fires, we saw something that stopped us short.
They're open! Fowler, the doors are open!
No! No, not go in, Dudley, no!
It's a trap. They're ready for us inside.
Ready or not, we're going in!
Dudley, it's suicide.
It'll take me about 1 minute to screw the levers in again. Then I touch them and we're away.
All right. I'll try to give you your 1 minute.
Good boy.
No. No, go. Not leave me.
You, my dear, you hold tight around my neck. You're coming home with us.
All right, let's go. We're in. Look! The machine! They haven't harmed it.
I don't see them.
Yet. Come on, quickly! Give me that other lever.
Doors, Dudley. They're closed.
Get in the seat. I'll be ready in a minute.
I waited for the hum that would signal our departure, and there in the darkness, the Morlocks were finally upon us. Cold, persistent fingers swarmed over my body, tugging at me, sucking me away from the machine, but I held tight to Weena as a man holds fast to life and tried to kick them away with my feet.
Oh,
hurry, Dudley! Hurry!
I can't seem to get these levers.
Quick or we're done!
Just... another turn, and it...
There, Fowler. We're away. We're gone.
Yeah, we made it.
You all right?
I'm all right.
Good. And Weena?
Weena isn't with us.
What happened?
They tore her from my hands. The last minute, they got her.
I tried to save her. I couldn't.
I know, old man. I still got a piece of her tunic here in my fist.
A little piece of her tunic, Dudley. But nothing else.
And so we came home again. Back into the very minute from which we had left. Back into 12 noon, May 9th. 1948. We were in Dudley's laboratory again, motionless, sitting on the ridiculous contraption which he called a time machine. Was it all a dream? A mad and feverish dream. Did any of it happen? Could any of it happen? No, of course not. How stupid. But then... what's this? What of this jagged piece of thick green silk I hold in my hand? What does that mean?
Escape, produced and directed by Norman MacDonald, tonight brought you The Time Machine by H.G. Wells. Adapted for radio by Irving Ravitch, with Eric Rolfe as Fowler, Jeff Corey as Dudley, and Kay Brinker as Weena. The musical score was conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Next week.
You are wandering in a vast white solitude.
torn by the icy blast of Arctic wind, your strength ebbing and frozen depth creeping up on you, and behind you a man with a gun from whom there is no escape.
Mutual Broadcasting System presents I Love a Mystery. Carlton Morse adventure thriller, Temple of Vampires. Six 6:00 in the evening at the crippled airplane, somewhere in the jungles near tropical Nicaragua. After a second night of mystery and terror, the three boys, Jack, Doc, and Reggie, are together again with the girl, Sunny, and the youngster, Hermie. During the night, an earthquake shook the Temple of Vampires so that a portion of the great roof tumbled in. Reggie freed the two captives, Manuel and Angelina, and rushed Sunny and Hermie from the temple, fearing all would be crushed in the debris. Then at 4:00 this morning, just after the three had been rejoined by Jack and Doc on the steps of the temple, a second earthquake set the earth to rocking and the temple to shaking. And as the fire filed down the jungle path to the lake, the great cathedral crumbled and tumbled in on itself, burying everything which remained inside beneath millions of tons of stone and rubble. And now at 6:00 in the evening of the same day, the five are resting on the ground near the airplane.
If you ask me, this is a day for a celebration.
You sure enough got an idea there, Reg.
Why do you say that?
Hasn't Reggie told you?
No. What is it?
Well, he's been tinkering with the undercarriage of the plane and got it in shape for a takeoff.
No. Really, Reggie?
Well, it will be ready by the middle of the morning tomorrow.
Oh, golly, that's wonderful.
You mean we're going to fly away from here tomorrow?
Doggone it, we ain't, Hermie.
Well, will you take me someplace where I can get some clothes to wear?
For Hermie. But I don't mind, really.
You don't?
No, I think you look swell in a loincloth.
Yeah, sure.
The only thing to wear in this kind of weather.
Well, I don't know. I like pants better.
Well, fella, the first thing we do when we take off is to go somewhere where we can buy you a pair of pants.
Okay.
Now, how about the gasoline, Jack?
Well, we've still got to strain it before we dare take off.
But, Jack, we've looked high and low for something big enough to strain it into, and there ain't nothing.
I know it.
See, I... Hmm? Well, I've been thinking about something. Maybe it's crazy.
What is it?
Well, don't laugh, will you?
Looky, honey, we need ideas. Sometimes the crazier they are, the better they work.
Well, what about the waterproof air mattresses? We've got four of them.
There you are, Jack.
That's it.
Well, doggone. Who says a female of the species ain't worth her weight in salt?
So you mean...
Sonny, you paid for your passage on this trip 100 times over.
It'll work?
Why, sure it'll work. Look, Jack, we got a couple of 5-gallon cans. We can strain the gas into them and then pour the clean gas into the rubber mattresses.
Yes, each one of them should hold 50 gallons easily.
Well, what are we waiting for?
Come on. It'll take most of the night to strain it.
Now you're talking.
I'll get up on the plane and dig out the 5-gallon cans and some chamois cloth.
Can I help?
You bet your sweet life you can, son. Everybody can help.
The easiest way will be to drain the gas out of the tank directly into a chamois and let it run down into a can. When a can's full, pour it into the air mattress while the second tin's filling.
Ah.
What's the matter with you?
Ah, doggone it, it makes a girl feel good to find out she's worth something.
A girl don't need anything but good looks. But when she's got good looks and brains, too, she's terrific.
Does this sort of make up for the way I faint it up on the leg?
Oh, are you still worrying about that one? Sugar, after this bright idea, you can faint all over the place.
Ah, here come the tin cans.
Got the chamois?
Yeah. Catch him?
I got him.
All right. I'll heave the air mattresses out as soon as I can break them up.
Okay. And with the gas drain and the undercarriage fixed up, I'm not mad at nobody.
Well, here, give me those chamois. I'll get the gas to draining.
Okay, you want some help?
No, this is a one-man job. You can pour the gas into the mattresses. Bring along one of those empty
tins,
chamois.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, what an experience.
Well, how about it? You glad you had it?
Yeah, Doc, I am. But honest to goodness, I will be glad to get back to the United States.
Hey, what about Peru and Ecuador?
Yeah, well, civilization anyhow.
Yeah, I could sleep in a bed and put my feet under a table again at that.
I feel awful about that temple.
Oh, you mean about that there earthquake, knocking it into a cocked hat?
No, not the temple, but Manuel and Angelina and all the acolytes of the temple. They must all have been buried under those tons and tons of stone.
Yeah, I guess. Vampire worship in this part of the country went out of existence in one whopping big spectacle.
Well, I guess we did all we could.
Here come the mattresses.
Okay, Jack.
We went back to see if we could save anybody, but it was hopeless.
Yeah, it'll take a wrecking crew years to dig everything out of that mess. And anyway, Sonny, we don't know for sure that anybody was caught in there.
Oh, but they must have been. But there's one thing I'm glad of, though.
And what's that?
That all those horrible vampire bats were destroyed. At least there won't be any more Indians sacrificed.
Yeah. Only don't you think the Indians are going to be awful lonesome for a while without their religion?
Mm-hmm. Aren't human beings funny creatures?
They are, at that.
All right, Doc. I've got a full can for you.
Attaboy, Reggie. Looks like I got work to do, Sonny.
Let me help her. There's anything I can
do. All right, now stand back, Lemmy.
But I got to learn about things, Reggie.
Just keep your eyes open.
How's it working, Reg?
Smooth as silk. Get that can empty and come back here, huh? This other one's almost full.
Sure thing. Come with me, Hermie.
Okay. You got something for me to do?
You bet. You're going to come in mighty handy. You got the mattresses ready, Jack?
Yeah. I had to clip off the metal part where you pump the air in so I could get a hole large enough to put a funnel in.
Uh-huh. All right, Hermie, come here.
Sure.
Now, look, you hold the funnel in this hole in the mattress while I pour. Can you do that?
Of course I can. That's easy.
Attaboy, now hold it still. Hold it still.
Yeah. Jack?
Hmm?
I just thought of something I can do.
What's that?
Well, we got started on this before we had any dinner. How about me digging out some food and passing it around while you folks are working?
Swell idea.
All right. You hungry, Doc?
Lady, you don't know the half of it.
So am I, Sonny.
All right. Tonight's dinner is my department.
You know, Jack, she's honestly grandma downright happy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just the idea that she helped us out of a scrape made her forget all about her being female.
Well, that's all of them. Then I'll go over and give Reggie a hand.
Hey, wait a minute. How are we going to fasten these mattresses to keep the gas from leaking out?
Well, just let them lie flat. The gas levels off, it won't run out.
Uh-huh. Okay, Hermie, that's the end of that can.
Yeah. Hermie, you calling me, Sonny?
Uh-huh. Can you help me for a minute?
Can I go?
Sure, run along.
Yeah, I can help you.
All right, come on.
Busier than a couple of birds, though.
What do you need me for?
Oh, well, look. Take these canteens of water while I climb down out of the plane.
Yeah, sure.
And reach them?
Yeah. Yes, I got them.
Thank you.
Look out coming down. You don't tear your slacks again.
Oh, I don't worry about a little thing like that anymore. There we are.
Hi, you're doing all right.
Well, from you, Remy, I take that as a compliment.
Yeah, that was almost like a salad doing.
All right, now, we'll open some cans of tomatoes.
You gonna eat some?
Sure.
But you hate cold tomatoes out of a can.
Honey, I'm gonna tell you something.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. I'm getting so I love cold tomatoes out of a can.
You do?
Sure. But don't you tell that.
Oh, no, I won't tell anybody.
Oh, thanks.
You know something, Sonny?
What's that?
Well, gee, this has been swell.
Do you think so?
I mean, being with all you folks.
Oh, well, we've enjoyed you too, honey.
Yeah, only...
Only what?
Well... I don't know what's going to happen to me when we get back to the United States.
Oh.
Yeah, my old man doesn't want me. And anyway, I don't know where he is now.
Honey?
Yeah?
Do you know the clothes you had on when we found you?
Sure.
But they were nice new clothes, all pressed and clean. Where did you get those?
You won't be mad at me if I tell you.
Of course not.
Well, just before my old man took me out to the airport, he took me into a Turkish bath and gave me the worst flubbing I ever had.
Yeah, I noticed you were nice and clean.
Yeah. Then we went into a place, you know, where they clean and press clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we went in. When the fellow wasn't looking, my old man grabbed the suit.
He stole it?
You mad?
Oh, but, honey, you didn't do it.
Oh, I didn't want him to do it. But he said a kid going on a trip had to be all dressed up.
Mm-hmm. And so that's how you came to us all dressed up and nice and clean.
Yeah. I guess you can be arrested for what my old man did.
Well, you just forget about that, see? That part of your life is all over.
It is?
You bet it is. Now then, how about helping me hand out the food to the workmen?
You all right?
Well, let's see now. We'll each slip a canteen over our shoulders.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Now, first we'll take the cocktails around.
Cocktails?
Uh-huh. Cans of tomatoes.
Oh, yeah.
See if they show us who can. And I will take these three. You ready?
Sure.
Right, let's go. All right, boys. First course coming up.
Well, doggone. Now, that's what I call service.
Here's one for you, Jack.
Thanks.
There you are, Reggie.
Ah, thank you, Hemi. Hey, look, let's drink to our takeoff tomorrow.
In canned tomatoes?
Well, sure, why not? Here's to heading for civilization at 12 noon tomorrow. I give you a safe takeoff and a happy landing. Bottoms up.
Bottoms up. Ah,
well, Sonny, I see you're drinking cold tomatoes out of a can and apparently liking it.
Yeah? Well, a girl can't be female all her life.
Didn't I tell you? All you needed was a little experience.
That's right, Reggie. All right, Hermie, now let's go back for the cheese and the crackers and the dessert.
Dessert, being in a bar chopper.
Right, a bar chopper. With nice warm water to wash it off.
Blamed if I ain't proud of the way she's coming along. How about it, Jack?
Now, Doc, don't tell me you're thinking of marrying the girl.
Oh, no, I'm not thinking of marrying the girl, but poor doggone it, she ain't going to make somebody a good wife.
Hmm.
Yeah, I know. You don't think any girl makes a man a good wife.
Here's another can of gas, empty.
Jack, you make me plumb aggravated sometimes. The prejudice that you've got against women.
I said there's another can of gas to empty.
Yeah, I heard you. Well, anyway, I like him.
No.
Yeah, I do so. Why, fella, where did future generations come from if it wasn't for women?
Are you asking me or telling
me? Just quite. Answer that one.
Well, I'm telling you.
All right.
Where would future generations come from if it wasn't for women?
Well, what's that? Well, blamed if I know. That's the truth.
Oh, the blaze is with it. You never get any place arguing with a mule. Give me that can again.
Jack, look there.
What's that?
Look who's coming out of the jungle.
Where?
Oh, doggone.
Manuel
himself.
You fellas got your guns?
Right here in my hand.
Well, keep them that way.
It looks like we're going to have to shoot ourselves a high priest yet before we're done with this thing.
Transcribed adventures of Jack, Doc, and Reggie will come to you tomorrow at this same hour. I Love a Mystery, written and directed by Carlton E. Morse, comes to you Monday through Friday, featuring Russell Fawson as Jack, Jim Bowles as Doc Long, and Tony Randall as Reggie York, with Mercedes McCambridge as Sonny and Sarah Fussell as Hermie.
Now, from the makers of Cold Water Omo...
Right, come along, everyone. I think we've finished for the day. Come along, Nicky, Mrs. Peel.
Home to bed to get ready for the gala dance tomorrow. I can't wait.
Goodbye, everyone. Don't forget your next lesson.
Good night.
Goodbye, Mr. Steed. You're going to be our star pupil. You'll be here tomorrow, on time.
Oh, you couldn't keep me away. Night.
Good night. Ivor, did all go well?
Easy. No trouble at all. Bernard is as dead as a doornail.
Good. The boss will be pleased.
I'll tell him myself.
You can also tell him about John Steed.
What about him?
He will be our next victim.
The Avengers. John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers.
Hello,
Episode 6, the final episode of this story, in which John Steed and Emma Peel go into their dance and solve all the problems caused by the quick, quick, slow death. John Steed and Emma Peel were now quite convinced that the dance salon of Terpsichorean Training Techniques was a cover-up organization. They knew there was at least one imposter as a client, and they were sure there was a direct link between the activities of the dancing school and several mysterious and gruesome murders. There was a gala night planned, and Mrs. Peel got to the studios early. Not because she wanted to practice, oh no, she wanted to snoop. In a corridor flanking the main ballroom, it was clear that someone was rehearsing. That someone was Lucille Banks, who ran the place.
Right, now just let's try it again.
Mrs. Peel followed the voice down the corridor. There was a small fanlight. From beyond came the sound of dancing lessons.
I've just got to risk it. A packing case.
Mrs. Peel climbed onto the packing case and looked through the fanlight. To her amazement, Lucille was dancing with a tailored dummy and talking to someone in the shadows.
You see, it's got to be absolutely smooth. Glide into it. No hesitation. One and two and one and two.
Mrs. Peel, to her amazement, saw the dummy had the card number 9 on its back. Lucille steered it cunningly towards a big arched display piece at the end of the room.
Be ready now. 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2, 3. Close back. Quick and slow.
Lucille disappeared behind the display piece and appeared out of the other side. Her partner now was a real man. The dummy had been jettisoned. The man wore identical clothes and had the number 9 on his back.
Splendid. Splendid, Boris. Much better. You did that perfectly. You'll be in perfect form for the takeover this evening.
Mrs. Peel had seen enough. She jumped down into the corridor and was hastily replacing the packing case in its original position when Chester Reed appeared, all bleary-eyed and slightly incoherent.
What was you doing out here?
I was looking for another door. The usual one into there's locked.
Oh, that's all right. It's only Lucille. You're rehearsing for tonight. It's gala night, you know, tonight. Yes. It's gala night.
In Litchin & Co. dress hire, John Steed was also preparing for gala night. He was resplendent in full tails. Cider was fitting him.
A splendid fit, sir. Yes, splendid fit.
Thank you. Now, where is the gentleman's secret pocket?
Oh, right here, sir.
Cider indicated a secret pocket in the waistband of trousers.
Ah, excellent.
Steed dropped a miniature gun into the pocket.
Might run into a spot of bother tonight. Can't be too careful.
I see. If you will forgive me, sir, that the suit, you won't forget it. It is on hire, and if damaged, the deposit
will have to be forfeited. Yes, I know. Don't worry. If the worst comes to worst, I'll endeavor to get shot where it doesn't show.
Very thoughtful of you, sir. Thank you so much. Best of luck.
And later at the dance salon, things were really swinging.
Glad you could make it.
Oh, I wouldn't miss one of your little soirees for the world, Miss Banks.
Oh, thank you. Oh, Mr. Steed, how splendid you look.
Good evening, Miss Banks.
This is your first experience of one of our little events. Please feel free to move around and enjoy yourself.
Steed moved on and managed to get himself alongside both the canapes and Mrs. Peel. Good steering,
Steed, this is bigger than we think.
You mean it's bigger than both of us?
Mrs. Peel,
I mean this organization. It's some sort of swap system, a takeover. A takeover of another person, another man's personality. I saw the whole dress rehearsal. Lucille danced around the ballroom, a quick whirl out of sight behind some scenery, and a change of partner.
Thought as much. The real purpose of the school is to infiltrate foreign agents into the country. You first select a lonely, anonymous bat.
Who no one's going to miss.
Get rid of him and replace him with a highly trained agent.
Off with the old, on with the new.
Marvelous method. I don't want to make a move yet, though. I'd like to catch them red-handed.
Well, you'll get your chance tonight. They're planning another swap.
Not tonight? Any idea who it is?
Mm-mm, I haven't found out yet, but hey, watch it, here's Lucille.
Oh, no, 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 dear Mrs. Peel. Even if you went down on your bended knees and begged, I'm absolutely booked up until dance number 12. Of course, I might be able to fit you in between Sir Roger de Coverley and the Lancers. Oh, thanks.
Mr. Steed, we're all going into the ballroom, if you're ready.
Certainly, certainly. Don't give up hope, Mrs. Peel. I may have a cancellation.
Mrs. Peel hung back as all the guests trooped in. She hid behind a potted palm when Ivor Bracewell approached with the man she'd seen rehearsing with Lucille.
You go through there to the back of the studio. He'll be wearing a number 9 on his back, like you.
I understand. I have rehearsed.
Good. And off you go. No slip-ups. The boss doesn't like them.
Mrs. Peel, sure now that she was right, moved into the ballroom where Lucille was making a speech.
I must explain that it is now competition time. Chester Reed has kindly consented to do the judging. It will be on your dancing alone.
Steve?
Hmm?
Steed, I've located the next victim.
Who?
He'll be wearing number 9.
Steed, this is your number.
Oh, 6.
Well, we can eliminate me.
Ah, Mrs. Peel, I understand you've been chosen to partner me.
Ivor Bracewell, how nice. Who would have thought it? Mr. Steed, we are dancing together.
Oh, are we? Charmed, Lucille.
Allow me to pin the number on you.
Lucille moved behind Steed, and with two pins provided, pinned the number on his back. But he hadn't got eyes in your head, Steve. She'd put the 6 on upside down. Your number 9. At that point, the music started up.
The 1 o'clock jump.
Mrs. Peel took to the floor with the obnoxious Bracewell pressing so tightly against her she could hardly breathe. So concerned was she with her own plight that it wasn't until some while later that she got a glimpse of Steve's back.
Oh, sorry.
Something wrong?
No, nothing at all. Steve!
Mrs. Peel caught Steve's eye and immediately waved at her partner's back. Steve waved back nonchalantly. Mrs. Peel turned Bracewell round so that Steve could see he was wearing number 6. Steve's turn to stumble.
I'm so sorry.
Are you trying to do a reverse double flip, you mad, impetuous man?
Mrs. Peel and John Steed contrived to steer their partners nearer to each other.
It's you, Steed. You're number 9, the swap.
And you are dancing with garlic sausage.
Mrs. Peel looked down at Bracewell's wrist. There was the tattoo. At this point, they both thought quickly and thought alike. Mrs. Peel put a hand round Bracewell's shoulders and removed the top pin of his card. The 6 fell down and became a 9. Steed had a bit of difficulty scratching his back, but eventually withdrew the top pin of his card. It fell down and became a 6. They danced towards the display piece at the end of the ballroom. Steed and Lucille sailed in first, and much to Lucille's surprise, out of the other side. Mrs. Peel and Bracewell followed them, and Boris, seeing the number 9 on Bracewell's back, hit him hard with a cosh. Boris grabbed Mrs. Peel and danced out onto the floor, but Mrs. Peel conveniently tripped, got a hold, and threw him back behind the display. Lucille, seeing what had happened, left Steve and rushed forward. Steve grabbed Mrs. Peel and said,
"Shall we dance?"
and did a quick polka to the nearest exit. Lucille, Peaver, and Chester Reed, leaving the dance hall in chaos, rushed after them. Lucille made a bad choice. She crashed into Mrs. Peel. Mrs. Peel grabbed her by arm and leg and swung her round a few times.
It's about time you tried the real attaché stuff.
Lucille Banks took the whole length of the corridor before she came to rest, out cold. Peaver was mad enough to tackle Steed. Steed clobbered him with someone's dancing pumps.
Well, Mrs. Peel, let the opposition clear the way, I think.
I think you stay exactly where you are, both of you.
Chester Reed, miraculously cured of any signs of drink, was facing them with a snub-nosed revolver in his hand.
Chester Reed, the drunken band leader.
Not drunken, but I am the leader, the boss.
The one who persuaded Willie Fair to use your organization as an escape route. To get his own back on the service that had downgraded him. The man behind it all?
That's right. Too bad you stumbled over all this, Mr. Steed.
Oh, I don't know. I've enjoyed my lessons here. You know, the step I enjoyed the most was...
The quick, quick, slow, quick, quick...
Like this!
With enormous speed, Steed leapt forward and grabbed Reed's gun arm.
And slow! Oh, Steed, I'm so sorry. Look at your evening jacket. Torn. And the bullet hit the shoulder padding.
Mrs. Peel, whenever I go out with you, I'm always prepared to lose my deposit. Sure you know that by now. Let's shimmy off, shall we?
The Avengers.
Listen every evening, Monday to Friday, to John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers. Brought to you by the makers of Cold Water Omo. The Avengers. Donald Monat as John Steed and Diane Appleby as Emma Peel is adapted and directed by Dennis Faulbig and produced by David Gooden.
Have a good evening and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwig from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby.